Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Go really electric with an EV or plug-in hybrid from the Kia e-range.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Liveline. No, it's not Joe Philip in for Joe for a day or two. I don't know if you had the same experience I did watching the news last night. There were so many deaths, it seemed, to try and process. Not least, of course, our own Donuchadh O'Dooling, and the surprising news for me anyway, that his wife Vera had died so recently as well. The news of Pat Hume, John Hume's widow, being buried as well. The only solace in all of those cases was that they had all had long, good, rich, full lives behind them, which made the news of Sarah Harding's death the really, really shocking one. She, of course, formerly of Girls Aloud, died from breast cancer at the age of 39. And Katie Louise, you were even younger than that, significantly younger than that, when you had your breast removed.
I had just turned 30.
Wow. Good Lord.
Yeah.
And had you ever been in the business of checking your breasts or thinking that you might be a candidate for breast cancer?
No, I never checked my breasts, ever. I used to read about it, but I was never inclined to check them.
That's an old person's thing. That's a 50, 60-year-old woman's concern.
Yeah, I was too young. Didn't think it would affect me at 30 or before that.
And what happened? Tell me.
I was breastfeeding my daughter. That breast used to get a bit achy when I was feeding her, and I just assumed it was a blocked milk duct because I was breastfeeding. And I found the lump. I ignored it. I said it to friends and family, and they all kind of said, "Oh, sure, you'll be fine. Oh, you're breastfeeding. It's probably nothing." But I couldn't stop thinking about this lump. My gut was telling me it was more. It was something. So, and I didn't really want to go to the doctor because I didn't want to waste the time, because it was probably going to be nothing. But I just couldn't stop worrying about it. So I went to the doctor. And I was told this: I have no family history. I'm only 30. Breastfeeding, it's probably nothing. Just to try feed a lot on that side to try and empty the duct. So I did that, and I went back again, and I said, "I really need you to send me for a breast check."
Now, hang on. What had happened between going the first time and coming back the second time? Had your conscience just nagged at you?
Oh, yeah. I couldn't sleep. I was so worried. It was just my gut feeling was telling me,
okay,
go again, go get a check.
But the advice, and this is not casting an aspersion on your doctor at all, the advice was, no, you're young, there's no family history, you're really such a low-risk kind of person.
Yeah.
But fair play to you, you listened to your body and you said, no, I think I know a little bit better on this occasion.
Yeah, you have to listen to your body.
And for the benefit of anybody else, Katie Louise, who's listening to this, describe that pain. Was it very localised or was it just a generalised kind of ache?
It was just an ache. It wasn't a pain. It was just an ache.
That just wasn't there in the other breast.
Yeah.
And was it worse as your breast filled up and you needed to feed, or was it the same kind of pain all the time?
No, it was the same.
All right. So you got a referral, and this is the kind of really, really scary thing here. Back in what point in 2019?
April 2019.
And when would that appointment have actually come good for you?
June 2021.
So 2 years and 2 months later. If you had gone that route and if you hadn't gone privately, do you think you'd still be with us?
No, it's so scary. It made me sick at the thought that so many women wait for these appointments. They get told they have to wait. I didn't meet the criteria for to be seen any quicker. And that's why I found my own doctor and I went myself privately. It's scary.
Thank God you were in the privileged position that you were able to do that. But good God.
I mean, I wasn't. I'm a single mom of four children. I wasn't My brother happened to put me on his health insurance to get my wisdom teeth out only at the start of that year. So I was so lucky to have it at the time. Now, it's health insurance is very expensive, but it kept me alive.
Well done, the brother.
Yeah.
And so what happened then? How quickly were you seen to in the private system? Now, bearing in mind that you would only 3 months ago have gotten seen if you had gone publicly for the first mammogram.
Yeah.
Never mind any actual question of surgical procedures. What happened next?
I think I waited, from when I rang the doctor, the consultant, I think I waited maybe 10 days for my first appointment in Cork. And I had a scan and biopsies taken, and I was back then, I think... 10 days later for results of the biopsy, and I was told I had ductal carcinoma.
Okay. And can you explain to me how serious a diagnosis that is or isn't?
It's crazy. I actually, when I was diagnosed, I didn't take it in. My friend told me, my friend was like, "Do you realise that they've just told you?" I heard the word carcinoma. I didn't know that meant cancer. And I had loads of mammograms that done and biopsies. I'd loads done that day, and it took a long time for it to hit me.
And how advanced was it?
It was the earliest stage of breast cancer, so I was very lucky.
Oh my God.
Very, very lucky.
And if you hadn't been breastfeeding and you hadn't been kind of paying attention to that region of your body, do you think you would have ignored it for longer?
I don't think I wouldn't have found it for a long time, because I never ever checked my breast.
And so what has happened since then? What was your treatment?
I had a mastectomy. I was very lucky. I didn't need chemotherapy or radiotherapy. I just had a full mastectomy, and all those results came back clear. They managed to take all the cancer out. So although having a mastectomy is huge, but I was very lucky that I didn't need to go through chemo or radiotherapy.
Okay. The operation was enough.
It was, yeah.
And how invasive was that mastectomy? I mean, how changed do you feel?
Oh, I'm totally changed. It's been a hard 2 years trying to get used to my new body and coming to terms with losing my breast. It's life changing.
And are you a candidate for reconstructive surgery?
I am. I am hopefully getting it done the end of October.
Okay. How do you feel about that?
I can't wait to get it done. I feel like it's kind of going to be an end to my journey. I can hopefully put it behind me and carry on with my life, hopefully.
What does it feel like being you now? I mean, has your self-confidence taken a bit of a knock?
It has and it hasn't. It's changed me totally, that I have more confidence in myself and that I'm in charge of my life, and I know what's right for me. And it's made me thankful for life. I was never thankful for life because I was alive and I was fine and I just took things for granted. But
I don't take things for granted anymore.
Yeah,
you're immortal when you're 30.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But you tell you, you did something absolutely amazing here, Katie Louise, and that is that you listened to your body and you challenged the medical advice, which so often so many people wouldn't do. So, you know, you have every reason, however much your self-confidence, your body image might have taken a knock. My God, you have an amazing story and an amazing instinct for what it is that you should have done, and you did it right.
Thank you. I am very proud of myself. I am.
Yeah.
For doing that.
And you published a picture after your surgery. Why did you decide to do that?
I had the photos done. A friend of mine is an amazing photographer, and he took photos of me straight after my surgery. Because...
Very, very tasteful, not the kind of intrusive shot or not a shot that you would look at and it would make you feel, oh my God, this is somebody who's been mutilated. It's very, very, very tastefully done and very sympathetic portrait.
Yeah. I took it knowing that I would one day share it. Now, I took that photo that was taken 2 years ago because when I was told I needed to have a mastectomy, the first thing I did was Google what I would look like without my breast. And they were all older women, because you think it just happens to older women. And not that those older women weren't beautiful, but they just weren't my age. And I couldn't relate to them because they were 20, 30 years older than me. So I knew I wanted to share this for anyone that's going through this, that they can see that it does happen to us and we're still women without a breast.
Yeah. And usually when you Google something, you tend to get worst case scenarios. Was that the case?
Yeah, it was.
And that the reality of this for you is very, very far removed from what you would see were you to Google reconstructive surgery or a mastectomy now, yeah?
Yeah.
Why is it, did they explain to you, that when women in their 30s, when younger women are hit by breast cancer, it tends to be so much more aggressive?
I don't know.
Okay. There are others who've gone through a very, very similar kind of story to you. 51551 is the text number. Philippa, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Philip. How are you?
You were 36 when you were first diagnosed.
I was indeed. I am 36 years of age with a 5-year-old daughter.
I think the amazing thing here is, well, you tell me, did the fake tan save your life or would you have realised that something was wrong before too long?
I think anybody who knows me would know that I'm a splash dash kind of rushing around the place person, and we were going out for Valentine's dinner and I was wearing a low V frontage, let's say, pantsuit. So as many women out there, as particularly with young children, realise the bit of tan was thrown on only parts that can be seen, so the arms, the feet, the ankles and the V of the neck. But when I was putting on the false tan, I felt a thickening in my right breast, which I hadn't felt before, and I thought it was unusual. But as we were rushing out the door, I didn't put much more on it.
And was that all over the breast, or was it localised to the area of a lump? What was it? What did it feel like?
No, it was from the nipple, say, up to nearly my armpit.
Good Lord, okay.
Yeah, and it was kind of...
Hard to the touch?
No, not hard to the touch. I was about to say, if you can imagine what I would imagine a piece of liver or a breast of chicken to feel under your skin. It was that sensation. It was harder, it was denser, but it was, I could move it and it was pliable. So I wasn't, I straight didn't go to, oh, that's a lump. I was going, oh, maybe this is something related to menstrual cycles or, you know.
And how large was it, Philippa?
To the touch, I'd say we were probably 3 inches in length by an inch width. God. That's what it felt.
And you'd never noticed this before?
No, never noticed. Again, before me, I just was 36. There's no history of breast cancer in my family. Never would have checked myself. I would have seen ads and billboards and Breast Cancer Month, and I would go, oh God, yeah, I must do that. And it just, you're rushing and you're racing and you're 36 and you've young family and you've work and your life and you're just not thinking of checking your breasts.
But and my you husband, had never, ever, husband, ever, ever before that checked your breast, no?
No, good never. Lord. And it was just literally putting on that bit of false tan, bit of pride to put on the false tan to go out to Valentine's.
imagine if you had worn a different top.
If I had worn a pullover or a polar neck, I'd never know. But I'm sure, obviously, I would have. I was told that I was extremely lucky and somebody was definitely praying for me. We went out that night, and my husband had said to me, I said it to him, he said, you should get it checked, because my mother had just recovered from bowel cancer. But even though there was no link between breast and bowel, I tipped over to my GP, and I left my GP again you're too young, you have no history. I wouldn't be worried about it. It could be a bit of a cyst. It could be related to your menopausal cycle. And uh-huh. So I left, went to the GP, said I left with a bit of reassurance. I did have a referral letter to see a breast specialist. I got an appointment a week later. And I went in, I had a clinical assessment by a lovely doctor. He felt what I felt, said, I'm going to send you down for a mammogram. Thankfully, I was able to avail of the triple assessment, the best care for mm-hmm. breast cancer practice. When they'd done the mammogram, they saw the abnormality, and then I was straight in for a biopsy. And still, like Kellyanne, I was in a world of my own going, yeah, this is nothing to come on. I have things to be doing, a place to go, a child to be collected, and the dinner
really,
to be doing.
Really?
I was so, like, not thinking.
This is not going to be me. This is not what's
no,
in
I'm
my
not
future.
Be. I'm fit, I'm healthy, I'm strong, I'm young. It's not in my family. Because I have friends where it is in their family. And yeah. I've gone, like, this is just not me. And then I got a phone call about a week later to go back. I was told I had stage 2 breast cancer. My tumour was oestrogen positive and HER2 positive. And on the 2nd of March, so about 4 days after that, I had a partial mastectomy and lymph node removal. Yeah.
That's all.
Bang, bang, bang.
That's all a whirlwind, I was just going to say. Were you dizzy coming out of the other side of that? Had you even processed what was happening before you went for the surgery?
Well, the day I found out, I told my husband not to even bother taking the time off work. I was going to skip down myself. I had only told my parents the night before I went down for the results because I didn't want them worrying. My mother actually met me in the foyer of the hospital because she's like, you're not going in there on your own. I was giving out sting to her. I was like, this is ridiculous. You're making a mountain out of this. And when I went in, she nearly fell off the chair when he told me, because I did also need, I needed 20 weeks of AC and Taxol chemotherapy and then 26 rounds of Herceptin, because HER2 can scatter and share into the blood. So that's how it can spread so quickly.
So half a year of chemo, basically.
Well, it was a year and a half in total, because I had the 20 weeks of AC, then the Taxol, then I had Herceptin, then I had radiation, then I had complications. My veins collapsed because there's so much scar tissue. So I had to get 2 PICC lines. Then I got blockages, so I had to get a port in my heart from going through my neck.
Oh, my God, Philippa.
Yeah, and then I was put on tamoxifen to stop the estrogen receptors in my body. That then led to thickening of the womb, which any person out there with breast cancer would say it can lead to thickening of the womb. So that summer then I had to have 3 D&Cs. I had a ruptured cyst I needed emergency surgery on. And then the oncologist, gynecologist, then said, look, there's something not right here. So I wanted to have a full hysterectomy and oophorectomy. So I was put straight into the menopause.
Oh, my God.
So my dreams and hopes and thoughts of having a big family were just, everything was gone. Just gone.
Philippa.
Whipped away.
I'm kind of beginning to wonder, like, in the hierarchy of things that your body had to cope with and you had to get your head around, where did the mastectomy feature in all of this?
I only had a partial mastectomy, but I do you know what, that was, I was in such a daze looking back. They could have done anything to me. I just, it wasn't real. It didn't feel real. The only time I remember going into kind of a shock mode was when I came home after having been let out of hospital, after having the partial mastectomy and the lymph node removal from under my arm, and I sat in the bath upstairs and I roared crying. And I couldn't get out of the bath. Like, my legs just went like jelly. You hear people saying their legs went from under them. I just couldn't get out of the bath. And I remember ringing my cousin because she had my little girl, because my husband doesn't work. And I remember ringing her and just saying, will you hang on to her till my husband Brendan, who's great and is brilliant, comes home to drag me out of this bath, because I can't get out of it, I can't move.
Oh my God.
And there hit me you then were, like a truck.
But I mean, just got to say, you had blithely skipped in and out of the doctor's surgery thinking, no, this isn't going to be me, to then just being steamrolled by this.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I have to say, you sound pretty chipper now, Philippa.
Yeah, I am, and I was saying this when Lisa rang me this morning, and I was thinking of Sarah Harding because I had been following her. And like anybody who's had a young diagnosis of cancer, let alone breast cancer, like I've watched and been following Sarah. The same with Emma Hannigan. I have such admiration for her, and indeed Keelan Shanley, to name but a few. Sadly, that have gone before us, and it's, you know, I feel sorry for Sarah. Like, she, you know, she never married. Like, obviously, I don't know her, but you know, she never married. She always came across like a fun girl, bit of like frail sometimes. She had her issues, but I just think, you know, if she was helped a bit earlier. I was reading that her, you know, she found lumps in 2019 under her armpits.
She waited eight months because of COVID and the hospital, and she didn't want to go into them. Yeah.
So she had got that help 8 months. So that kind of then makes me go, you're blessed. You know, you're alive. You've married, your daughter, you know, she hadn't got that opportunity, and you should be grateful. But another part of me, when you say it's chipper, another part of me, and I think most women that you'll talk to, or indeed anybody who's had a cancer diagnosis, you're never the same.
You do live with
an element of fear of, oh God, if this comes back. And I, particularly because I ended up having to have the hysterectomy and oophorectomy, I couldn't have any more children. I was told not to delay my treatment, to start my treatment straight away, not to even be bothering, you know, with freezing eggs, because to live for the child I had, not to be hoping that I'd have more, which was a lot to take. But now, like, I do fear that if it comes back, she's on her own. And that to me that's the bit that breaks my heart.
And in your case, what are the chances of that happening now? Or have they given your team bill of health?
I'm on tamoxifen now. I have to take that for 5 years, which, to dampen down any of the estrogen receptors that within my body. And the reason I had the 26 rounds of Herceptin is that the tumour was also HER2 positive, and that scatters in the blood. So the idea was that all the chemo I had chased down any cells that had escaped or showered into the blood. So I've had all my mammograms to date are clean. I have a checkup with my oncologist every 6 months, and then I have yearly checkups with my breast specialist, and on that date I get my mammogram as well. But I'm very fortunate that I have got health insurance, and that if I do worry or if I'm panicked about anything, I know I can pick up that phone and ring the secretary and go, look, I feel this, I feel that, I just want to get it checked.
How has this changed your sense of yourself? I mean, going from being able to enjoy your body, being young, having intentions, you said, of a large family, to suddenly your body turning against you, and now having had a hysterectomy, just had the prospect of a family completely removed from you. That's an awful lot to try and take in and turn around in your head.
Yeah, it is. And I would say that I'm bitter. I am very bitter, but I'm not. Sometimes I'm bitter at myself, at my body, that it let me down. That's sometimes how I would think. But then I look at the likes of Sarah Harding and I go, no, Philippa, get a grip. You're still here. You're still one foot in front of the other on bad days. You've like a little girl there now looking to you, and you have to rear her as best you can in case that does ever happen. You have to be the best you can be for her.
Okay. 51551. Philippa, stay with us. Katie Dewey, stay with us as well. Michelle, you were in Tesco yesterday in Bray when you found out that Sarah Harding had died.
Yeah, that's right, Philip. I was doing my shopping in Tesco, and the lovely cashier was saying, oh my God, Sarah Harding's just died. And I asked her, I said, what did she die of? And she said, breast cancer. And I just looked at her and I said, I had that, you know. I was diagnosed last May in the first lockdown. So Sarah was, well, I think Sarah was only diagnosed 3 months after me.
Yeah.
I just to hear that, you know, somebody diagnosed so soon after I was now gone, you know.
I know, I'd say it'd knock you for six, absolutely, news like that. And what age were you when you got your diagnosis, Michelle?
I was 46, Phil. it was, do you remember the fabulous weather during the first lockdown?
Yeah.
I was, I had been out in the garden all day with my little girl, and it was a scorching day, and that evening I came in and I was putting something I'd never do, Philip, with three young kiddies, have the time to put body lotion on myself. And I was smothering myself with body lotion Friday night about 9 o'clock, and I noticed, Philip, an indent in my nipple. And I thought to myself, that's a bit strange. Put it to the back of my head. And then on Monday morning, Morning Ireland were talking about the fact that women weren't presenting to the breast clinics. And I phoned my GP, Dr. Matthews in Enniskerry, and it was the height of the COVID. And I remember saying to him, look, I know you're up to your eyes, but I've noticed this kind of dimple in my nipple. He said, come up to me. And the next day, Philip, I was being seen by my amazing breast consultant in the Beacon, Dr. Terry Boyle.
And Michelle, for the benefit of anybody else,
yeah,
describe this, the opposite of a lump, the opposite of what it is that you would expect to be looking for, an indent.
It was an indent in my nipple. And the next
but,
day...
But how deep? I mean, was it something that it you could fit your little finger into, or the top of a pen, or what?
It was puckered in. It was like a tiny... And do you know what, Philip? My sister, who's in the medical profession, the next day I phoned my sister. I said, Julie, I have found this indent. And she said to me, get Rachel to take a photo and send it to me. And my sister has since told me that the minute she saw that photo, she knew.
Oh, God.
It was breast cancer. And, Philip, since I've gone through everything, right, I did phone the Breast Cancer Society, and I said to them, I have this photo in my mobile, which clearly shows the indent.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I would be so delighted if I got it to the right hands to be able to share it on the correct places to make women aware of what to look out for. You see, Philip, my tumour was confined to a milk duct behind my nipple. That was what was causing the indent.
And was this, well, insofar as there is any good news when you get a diagnosis like this, but was the fact that it was confined to a single duct good news in your case, Michelle?
Philip, it was amazing. The Monday I went up to Dr. Matthews in Enniskerry, he has since told me he knew it was breast cancer. He calmly said to me, let's get you checked, Michelle. Tuesday, the next day, Philip, I was in the Beacon with Dr. Terry Boyle, and 5 days later, he sat me down with my sister and he said, Michelle, you have breast cancer. And 3 weeks later, I went in for a mastectomy.
Right.
So I was so lucky.
Yeah, yeah, very, very, very lucky, if luck indeed.
Philip, it was so frightening because I was seen so quickly, so promptly, because other women weren't coming forward. All mammograms were on hold because of COVID.
Right.
So I was blessed.
And what happened? Did you have a full mastectomy or partial or what?
No. Dr. Boyle had discussed a lumpectomy.
Uh-huh.
But then he decided, because of the position, it was right in the middle, he decided to go for the mastectomy. And Philip, I was on for it. I said, just do it. Just take it. You know, just do the full mastectomy. And
right.
He did.
And after the operation, did you have any regrets about that? Or how quickly did you come to terms with the fact that you had no longer had this breast?
I didn't care. I felt so
really?
Lucky. I felt luckier than I would have felt if I'd won the lotto. I couldn't have cared less. I have the most amazing husband. I have the three beautiful children. I'm 47 now, Philip. I have my mm-hmm. fake boob. It's absolutely perfect. And I just feel so lucky. So lucky.
And you feel fully confident in your own body and you're out and about,
yeah,
knocking as much life out of as there is to be knocked out of it?
I couldn't. Now, me personally, Philip, that gorgeous girl who was on, who from Cork, you know, she's 30. I think maybe I'm 47 now. Maybe if I was her age, I would consider reconstruction without a doubt. Okay. But I feel for me, I got through the mastectomy so well. I had 3 weeks of radiation, which was great. And I'm not looking back.
Fair play to you. Well done, Michelle.
Yeah, well, I had amazing support, you know.
Okay. And just before I go to the break, Philippa, let me go back to you for 1 second.
Yep.
How different would things have been had you been checking your breasts earlier and had you come across this, I don't know, 3 months, 6 months beforehand? Did you ever find that out, or is that just, would that be teasing yourself?
I did actually ask, and I was told that it definitely wouldn't have been as aggressive. The treatment wouldn't have been as aggressive.
Right.
I probably, when I say get away with radiation and the partial mastectomy, that's no joke either for anybody.
But you might not have had to have the hysterectomy because you wouldn't have to have the same chemical
or
treatment.
Or all the chemo, or, right, you know, all the radiation that I had to have. So, but that's, I mean, for me, and the two other ladies have said, like, early detection is, it's key, and no matter how small a lump is, or it doesn't have to be a lump, as we've heard, like, it can be any change within your breast, under your armpit, all the way up to your collarbone. I mean, just check, make it your business to do it.
And so how often do you check yourself now? What's your routine?
Well, now, I'm OCD now about it. I would have always said, and the advice would be to check after you've had your period, because a lot of women will experience changes within their breasts before.
So if you do it at the same time every month, you have a frame of reference to the previous month.
Exactly,
yeah.
And that's what they say. But obviously, I'm not in that situation. And I suppose because I would be very panicky still about it returning, I would check probably once a week. Or if I do, like if I get a pain or I get a sharpness in it, you know, which I know that I have been told by the surgeon that's nerve endings and stuff, and not to be panicking so much about it. But I just, for the sake of peace of mind, I'll just run my hands and I take a deep breath, put loads of shower gel onto my hands, and I just check it and just get it over and done with, just get it done. That's just the way I am about it in my head.
But it's a slightly panicky thing now until you've gotten it done and reassured yourself, no, there's nothing.
There's nothing there, yeah, exactly.
Oh, all right, Philippa. But look, the implied message of what you're all saying, ladies, really could not be clearer. It doesn't need a man like me to spell it out. You've done an amazing job, all of you. But there's more calls. Stay with us, please. More calls after this.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Orla, hello, good afternoon. How are you?
Hello.
Orla, can you hear me there?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Absolutely perfectly. Little bit faint, perhaps.
Yeah.
But Orla, tell me, in your case, the mammogram missed something that it was ultrasound picked up.
Yes, they actually did two mammograms and it was a little bit hazy looking, so they did the ultrasound as well on the same day.
Okay. And is that something that's common? Because I had always thought that the mammogram was the sort of the gold standard of these things, but what was it that it didn't detect in your case?
Well, I actually didn't have a lump at all.
Oh.
So, yeah. So my right breast is a tiny bit swollen on the side, like I'd gotten a knock or something like that.
Right.
So when I went down to the doctor, she said, I asked my husband and he said, I can see, but it's nothing. Went down to my doctor, she said, I see what you're saying, but it's nothing. So 2 weeks later, I went into the hospital and they said the exact same. I can see what you're talking about, but it's nothing. And then he said, I'm going to get the consultant to check it.
And Orla, were you pushing all the time? Were you saying, no, I'm sorry, I think it's something?
No. This is all within 2 weeks. You know, it was my doctor. I went down to get bloods done. I said, have a look at this. And then she said, I'll send you in for a breast check. You know, just to be on the safe side. And then I went in 2 weeks later for a breast check. And the first doctor was like, no, I don't think it's something. I just have to get somebody else to have a look. And the second guy saw something. So I went down for a mammogram. They did a second mammogram. And then they did a ultrasound. And then they did a biopsy. And I actually, to be honest with you, just thought I was getting great service. You know, I kind of skipped in, skipped out. Okay. And it was when I was leaving, they gave me a letter to hand in to the consultant, and I handed it in, and I said, look, I'm going, whatever. And she said, no, the consultant wants to see you. And I said, but I saw him earlier on, you know. And he just said, sit down. He said, like, you know, this is serious.
You were not in a place to be receiving this news. You were not expecting this at all.
Not at all. I was smiling under my mask, and I was like, whatever. And I kind of left. It was the Easter, the Tuesday before Easter. So I had to wait till the Tuesday after Easter. So they confirmed it was cancer, and it was 3 centimetres. It was kind of more like, it's called a diffuse kind of cloud. So it was 3 centimetres. Then they did the CT scan. It was 9 centimetres. So it meant I needed a mastectomy. And when they did the mastectomy then, they took it out, and it was actually 14 centimetres. So, yeah, I was really lucky, though, because it went around my lymph nodes, but actually couldn't get into my lymph nodes. So it's just in the one area.
And did they remove lymph nodes as well as
they did.
A precaution?
They removed 3. Yeah, yeah, they removed 3.
And explain to me then, after the surgery, where does that lymph go? Because presumably that area can still fill up with fluids, no?
To be honest with you, I wasn't really worried about the lymph nodes. They were gone within 2 weeks. It was the whole mastectomy that I was kind of worried about. Once they took it, so they removed all the cancer. So I'm starting my chemo and my radiation cancer-free. So, you know, I'm very lucky that way. They did a thing called an Onca test, so the likelihood of the cancer ever coming back to me is 16%.
So, sorry, Orla, I'm just getting the picture now. Silly me. Yeah. You are right in the middle of all of this. How recently was the mastectomy?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. So I went in on the 30th of March this year, and within 36 days they had removed my breast. They actually did a JEP reconstruction, so it was like an 8-hour procedure. So they rebuild your breast with your stomach muscles. So for a week.
Have you started chemo yet?
I've done 3 of my 8, and it's gone really, really well. Kind of okay for me. I'm starting my radiation tomorrow.
Because the second person I've said this today, you're also sounding pretty chipper for somebody who's in the middle of chemo.
You know what? I'm so lucky. It was, you know, that poor girl passed away yesterday. We found it. I'm fine. I wasn't sick. I was walking 10 kilometres every morning. There was never one morning that I said I was tired. Apparently, it had been growing for 2 years. And no family history, nothing. No.
Good Lord. So are you now pretty rigorous about checking yourself up and...
Well, see, I always checked because I had 3 children that I breastfed, or I have 3 children that I breastfed, and I would have always checked, but there was no lump. So I was checking and, you know, I wasn't feeling anything. It was actually my whole breast. So it was from right under my armpit to the far side of my nipple. Well, so
the lesson here is, I mean, it's obviously not enough to just have a bit of a rummage around for a lumps, because if we have people talking about indents, with people talking about slightly hardened areas, in your case, it sounds, well, frankly, so non-specific, Orla, it's very hard to describe what it was.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, when I went in, when I was called in, it was Professor Hill in Beaumont, and he said to me, like, who found this? And I was like, I didn't. He went, you found this? And he was quite surprised that I actually found it. And I was like, yeah, I thought it was just a little bit swollen looking nearly, you know. And he was like, okay. He was like, well, you're lucky you found it. So
the message here is, anything irregular, anything even vaguely out of the ordinary, be it a freckle or whatever, is something that in your experience deserves a professional or 2 or 3 to look at.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Orla, thank you very much. 51551. Shauna, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm going to ask you a number of intimate questions, but can I start straight away by asking you what age you are?
I'm 28.
And when you got your diagnosis, how long ago was that?
In July.
All right, so you're also in the middle of this. And what was the news, Shauna?
I found my mum had breast cancer 2 years ago, so I always checked, and I found a little lump. So because of COVID and stuff, it actually took a little bit longer for me to get checked. I found it in January, and I only got my ultrasound in June.
Okay, and you were trying to do this through the public system, were you, Shauna?
Yeah, I ended up ringing to go private, but in the end, public rang me for the exact same day.
Really? Okay. But still, 6 months from the moment that a lump was detected.
And then I ended up having another lump because I was waiting so long.
Okay. And what have the doctors said to you now? What's the prognosis?
I got a mastectomy 5 weeks ago. So left breast is gone, and then I found out that I'm actually positive for the BRCA gene as well, so I'll have to get a mastectomy on the right breast too.
And the other one as well.
Yeah, and then I am, at the moment, I'm undergoing IVF, and then I'm starting chemo in about 3-4 weeks.
Oh, good Lord.
And then radiation straight after chemo.
Shauna, you're saying this in a very matter-of-fact way, but there's no 28-year-old woman who's going to be able to take the news that they're going to lose both of their breasts.
Oh, come here, like, they're only boobs if it means that I'm going to live. If it means I'm going to live, I don't care.
Yeah, of course, when you put it like that, but, you know, having accepted that you are going to live and you are going to go on and thrive and survive, you're going to be doing it very changed. Is that difficult to get your head around?
I don't think so. Like, I don't know. I've actually been very positive about the whole situation. And
indeed,
all I wanted to bring from the situation was to share a little bit of awareness. So I've just been sharing awareness on Instagram and stuff to get people to check and go and get checked.
Yeah. What are the numbers again of people with the BRCA gene? I mean, it's...
Honestly, I didn't even know about it until I got diagnosed, and I've been looking a little bit into it, but I honestly still don't know too much about it.
I know. It does seem like one of the cruelest kind of hands to be dealt, though. Did you ask yourself, you know, what is it that I have done in this or a former life to deserve this?
No, not really. Like, I don't know. Like,
you're great. You're very matter of fact about this now.
It just happens. Like, it happens to some people, and you just don't know if it's going to happen to you or not. And if it does, you just have to take it and go with it.
Mm. What was the experience of having the mastectomy like? Because you sound like the woman that we need to talk to kind of demystify the whole process.
Like, it's not as bad as, like, you're obviously terrified going into it, but it's not as bad as people say. Like, it's actually fine. I got out the next morning after having my mastectomy, so it wasn't too bad, and I've recovered really well. I'm back in the gym. I'm like back doing everything I was before, so not too bad. I think once you stick to your physio and stay positive, you'll get through it.
You're absolutely amazing, because, well, look, I have to say, I obviously don't have boobs. Well, I have moobs.
I was
just going to say they probably might be. But the thought of losing that area, losing that much tissue from any part of your body, is absolutely terrifying. How did you process that? How did you get around that?
Honestly, the minute they told me that I had, well, I knew, like myself, that I was going to be cancer, but the minute I found out for sure, the first thing I said to them was, can I get it taken out? So I just think once I knew in my head that I had cancer in it, I just wanted it gone. And if it meant that my boob was going to be gone, I didn't care.
Okay.
But I will get reconstruction after all my treatments.
All right. Stay on the line there. I want to bring in Maria. Maria, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon to you. How are you? I've been listening to your listeners.
And why did you call? What was your story, Maria?
Well, I was diagnosed with breast cancer in my 30s, 10 years ago. And I would have been a person who would have made avail of both services. I got a discretionary medical card, and also I also had private health insurances. And also to be able to tell you about the differentiation between how you're treated with both.
How was that?
Well, naturally, everybody's entitled to the public service, no matter what wage you're on. You can go to your GP and he'll publicly put a referral in for you. Anyway, I found it myself on a Saturday morning. I had four daughters, looked down east and west, as they are at that age, my 30s. Slight crease, a very slight crease. Jumped out of bed, leaned forward, skin sticking to breast tissue. Breast cancer. Ran to my GP on the Monday. The likelihood of you having this, Maria, in your 30s is whatever. You know, poke, poke, poke. Sent off a non-urgent letter of referral. And then, of course, the waiting around. Like an ambulance who's waiting around for these types of things.
You and know, what was your instinct, Maria?
When I hopped out of the bed and saw the skin sticking to the breast tissue, I immediately stood up and said, I've got breast cancer. There's nobody telling me anything different, Phil. Nobody was telling me anything different.
And you were
my
right.
Own GP on the Monday, he was giving me, look, the likelihood of you having this, blah, 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 blah. So I waited 14-day turnaround time. I had done a clinical placement as a student nurse before in the same hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew the 14-day turnaround time is usually the case. Day 14, nothing came through the letterbox. Immediately I was on the case, right down to I knew my hospital number.
Fair play.
So he said, So the women on the phone said, well, that was a non-urgent one. Here's me, non-urgent, says I to myself. So I said to my ex-husband, check this for a game of cards. I said, be private health insurance, what the hell am I doing here? So immediately I printed off my letter of referral to a private hospital in Dublin. I'm living in the South East. Rang them up, said, I'm going to go and run into my GP to send this up to you guys, and then I'll ring you back. So I rang them back, we'll see you at 10 to 3 tomorrow. That's how fast it was. So by the time my public letter of referral came in...
It's great for you, Maria. Absolutely great for you. But it's so unjust that it takes somebody who knows the hospital system as intimately as you to get that kind of treatment.
Well, you see, many years later, when I'm no longer... Now I'm a fully-fledged medical card patient and I don't have the luxury of availing of private medical insurance. I do know what it's like to be on both ends of the stick, you know? But by the time that the triple breast assessment came into the public system, I'd already been up to Dublin, had my mammogram, ultrasound, the only time I ever experienced it in my 30s, and less than a week later, been diagnosed with breast cancer, lobular carcinoma, two tumours. And by the time my referral came around for the triple breast assessment in the public system, I'd already had my double mastectomy and surgery by the time that landed on the floor.
Good Lord. Okay.
Yeah, that's how fast it happens. That's how fast it can all happen. Well, and you've no choice.
We also have to say that was 10 years ago, and one has to hope that things have improved, because I have to say my own very, very limited experience of
this.
Well,
actually, the only thing that has improved in relation to the last 20 to 25 years in relation to breast cancer treatment is the use of things like targeted gene therapy and tamoxifen.
Yeah. What I was going to say is that the treatments are now improving so rapidly and so radically that those 5-year survival rates that they usually quote for anybody who has been first diagnosed.
Early detection does not save lives. We're all in for cancer research. Early detection doesn't save lives. But those with stage 0, stage 1, stage 2 disease who still, like anybody else, can go on and die of other things in the rates, or it can come back
indeed.
And take
But the
life,
point that I was going to make is that they say that the 5-year survival rates have been kind of knocked out of whack because there have been so many improvements and continue to be so many improvements within the course of the last 5 years that somebody who is getting cancer now has an even better chance of survival than the statistics are going to indicate that
depending on what cancer they do.
Depending on what cancer, of course, absolutely. And 10 years on, how have you absorbed it, Maria? You sound like the kind of person who's taken it in their stride.
Well, let me see. I had the diagnosis. I had a double mastectomy with the type of breast cancer I had.
Right.
There's 6 to 10 different types of breast cancer. There's ones that are triple negative breast cancer, which means that they're not hormone. You can't treat them with ordinary regimens of chemotherapy because it's triple negative. It's negative to those different types of regimen treatments. I had lobular carcinoma, and the type of lobular carcinoma I had a prophylactic, meaning that I had to have my other breast removed because the chances of it recurring in the other breast. So I was like the Queen of Hearts there from Alice in Wonderland. That dish, off with their heads, off with them both.
you know,
when you're diagnosed or something like that, me personally, I didn't give it a toss that my mammary glands going into bobbing up and down, probably in formaldehyde at Trinity College and some medical school didn't care. I didn't care. All you want to do is survive. And then when people say to you, oh God, you're so brave, I wouldn't mind. You never get so many compliments when you're going through cancer treatment. There you are, one eyelash left. You're bloated out looking like a moon monster, and you never get so many compliments, and you never got so many math cards either. Dear Lord, it's hilarious. Now, I couldn't get reconstructive surgery, Phil, because 6 months after I had my surgery, my chemotherapy, 6 months later, mind my own business, I landed in hospital. They were telling me I had a tumour in my heart. Most likely broke off from the two tumours in my breast. Travelled to my heart, wouldn't have shown up on the PET scan as it was quoted to me. Your heart would have lit up like a light bulb. So I said, so what is this? So they were telling me it was a tumour. They told me that and then I said, okay, I'll ask straight out. So how long do I have to live? Even with thoracic surgery and palliative chemotherapy, they were telling me I had less than 6 months to live. In actual fact, they were wrong. They got it wrong. And I'm going to correlate between the public and the private system here. So they'll cut me loose on my discretionary medical card. I could have been waiting 4 to 6 weeks to find out, because we need to restage your cancer, Maria. We need to do this all again. My own oncologist came back from holidays. I don't think you have a tumour in your heart, but I think you might have a blood clot in your heart. So if I was to wait in the public system, I could have been waiting 6 weeks to find out if I'm going to get a stay of execution or if I'm going to the gallows. So I broke that news to my four daughters, who were 8, 10, 12, and 18 years of age at that time. Because I was going with the advice from a consultant consultant cardiologist who handed that report to a consultant oncologist who my oncologist was on holidays at the time. So she sat down and told me the news that I had less than 6 months to live with a tumour in my heart. So I'm like, again, here we go. I'm not waiting around on this public system to find out if I'm going to the gallows. So I went up to a private hospital in Dublin and I had a cardiac MRI done.
And once again, and the private system stepped in.
While I was busy there waiting in the...
All right, Maria, look, continued good health to you. Hope you stay fighting fit, and thank you very much for your call. So many more calls coming in, so many more texts on 51551, but I need to get this break out of the way.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Tara Malloy, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
What age were you when you first checked your breasts?
I didn't really check them. I actually found a lump when I was 38.
And you'd never done it before that, no?
Never. It was never really, yeah, no. I was hands on heart. I never really checked them.
How did you find what you found then?
I actually walked into a handle of a door in my bathroom, and I found a lump, and I thought, oh, that's strange, I've done something to myself. And then I went to my amazing doctor, who straight away said, let's get checked, and I went up to the Triple Clinic in Beaumont, and went through the biopsies and things that were needed, and a big shock and a big surprise to everybody. Mm. It was a 5 centimetre tumour and had spread to my lymph nodes.
But you were 38, and again, I presume that you didn't think that this was in your future or on the cards for you.
Absolutely not, no. World turned upside down that June. But again, I just want to reiterate, check out, but the medicine and the medical world, I know people are having different experiences in hospitals. I, 14 years later, have had a great experience with my team. They've always been there. I'm very astute with my body and my signs, but... You know, I went through the chemo, I had the radiation, I've had mastectomies, I've had reconstruction, I've had other surgeries because I'm BRCA2, I've had a hysterectomy. But you know what? I'm still here. And that's what the message I wanted to say. You know, it's a horrible, it's cancer sucks. You go to hell and back, but you kick it in the ass.
But
and,
you're
you
more
know,
than still here, Tara. I mean, you're living a life. You're not just clinging on.
Oh, no, 100% living a life, and I'm every day grateful. And I just, you know, it. As I said, I'm lucky, and I
what you've
haven't
been through,
changed, just, like, you know.
Again, I mean, I think that you're all absolutely amazing that the word lucky is the first one that jumps into all of your mouths, because listening to you, I'd say, frankly, you're anything but lucky with what you've been through. But if you can... take that news and turn it around in your head and look at yourself as being one of the more fortunate ones. Fair play, Tara.
Absolutely. You know, years ago, people wouldn't have even survived chemo treatment. They gave them too much. It was pure poison, and they gave them too much, so they didn't survive it. So chemo's come on. Not everybody now, when they find tumours, are having to have to go through, you know, chemo. Up in Beaumont, especially, the research that they're doing, it's growing every day. Statistics are blown out. Every single day, statistics are blown out because somebody outlives yesterday's statistics.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's amazing. They're throwing money at us. The research is amazing. I hope someday, because I've got the gene that's faulty, that my kids will get something maybe that's a reverser. So I look at it as powerful information that there's 50% chance they won't get any... you know, effect from the bad gene, or, you know, they have 50% of more information than the average person on the street has to be screened and to be checked and, you know, to be aware. But, you know, it is hard for anybody getting a recent diagnosis. It's awful. It really is. And just to give them the reassurance...
But they should take heart, exactly, is what you're saying, that, you know, this is one of the few areas of women's sexual and reproductive health where the science is now outperforming and outstripping areas that are more traditionally male, and that a diagnosis is anything but a death sentence now.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah.
Tara, thank you very much for your call. 51551.
Very welcome.
Tracy, good afternoon. How are you?
Not too bad.
What happened to you, Tracy?
I was 22. I found a very small breath, getting ready, getting changed one day, found a little lump, told my mum, and she said, oh, I think you better go to the doctor with that. I went to the doctor, had a biopsy, and 2 months later they came back and told me it was breast cancer.
And 2 months later, after biopsy, so this was quite a long time ago, I take it, Tracy?
Yes, I was 22 at the time, I'm 63 now. But at the time, it was so unusual that they had to be doubly sure, and thus the delay in the diagnosis.
Okay. And how was the treatment back then? How was mastectomy? And did you have chemo after it?
I had a wonderful surgeon, Peter Prendeville. He was responsible for some of the Stardust cases of the time.
Yeah.
He did both the mastectomy and a reconstruction. I had some little difficulties afterwards. I was fortunate that I didn't have to have chemotherapy or radiation. So I've had a number of biopsies over the years, but I'm 63 and still there.
Indeed. And at what point in your younger formative years, in your 20s, did you become sort of accustomed to or accommodated to life without your breasts?
I think, you know, it was so much more difficult for my parents at that point than
really?
Me. I think, yeah, because it may be a little bit of the arrogance of youth and this wouldn't define me, and a little bravado. And I always called it a kind of a suspended emotion. I think, really, when I was about in my early 30s, when I had my first child, I was more aware of how fortunate I was.
Mm-hmm.
And for a little while, I kind of went through the motions, but this was fine, you know. It took me a little while, but I got over it. And then some years later, when in my 40s, after having three children, my breasts had changed, and I was a very much larger size. And that was uncomfortable. And I went to my doctor and he said I was past my sell-by date. Very nice.
What?
In the most gentle way. I had a great relationship.
Oh, sorry. So that's your choice of words, not his formula of words.
My reconstruction was past its sell-by date.
Okay.
And it was very gentle the way he put it, because I was in agreement.
I didn't realise that there was a best before or a use by on reconstructive
really.
Surgery.
My body shape had changed because I was 22.
Okay,
tiny.
Okay, fair enough.
I had three children and I was 40, and I wasn't in proportion. So I had another reconstruction, and that's been it since.
And, well, you're never going to know really any different than the body that life or fate ended up dealing with you. But you were always quite happy living in it, were you?
Yes. I think you have to be. I was fortunate. I had great family support. And it was so much harder for my parents, so much harder for them, because I was their only daughter. It was difficult. I thought that there was enough suffering.
Mm-hmm. And Tracy, before I let you go, in the, what is it now, 41 years since you first noticed that lump, how assiduous are you about checking yourself out?
Always when I have a shower, every morning. Just a quick check to make sure nothing has changed.
Really? It's a daily routine now?
I don't even notice it. It's sort of part of a routine, you know. It's so many years later and so easy. Plenty of soap and it's perfect time when you're showering.
Every day for 4 decades, and it doesn't cause you any anxiety doing it?
No. I've had lumps and bumps, and I've had very good support from my team, and I've had both mammograms and the radiographer, and both of them have, and a couple of times maybe I've had to have a biopsy or two. Fortunately, everything is fine.
Good to hear. Tracy, thank you so much for your call. So many more calls, so many more people moved by and comparing themselves to or thinking there, but for the grace of God, to Sarah Hardig's using the news of her death at 39 yesterday.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Right, well, we've been able to compare private and public treatments. Now let's see how they do abroad. Suzanne, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
You had your diagnosis in France.
I did. I was in France last summer. I'd say I go over there quite regularly just for part of the summer holidays. And I always find I slow down there. The French culture, they make you slow down. None of this racing around. So I just was lying, I suppose, down reading one night and I felt this large lump. Most of the women have talked about lumps and stuff. But I suppose in hindsight, looking back, I was very tired for the 6 months prior to diagnosis. And I was very agitated. I'd put it down to having to, you know, remotely work at home and having to deal with that and the challenges of that and COVID and the lockdown. But yeah, so I went to the GP in France a few days before I was due to go home. And a very nice man, and he felt this large lump that I had suddenly felt. And I explained to him that I was kind of losing weight. I know I'd been kind of pumping the roads, kind of cycling and all the rest, but this is an unnatural kind of weight loss. And he said to me, oh, you know, with COVID now going home and you've your 2 weeks quarantine, I think you just go down the road to our specialism clinic, kind of a mammogram centre, you know, kind of radiology and all of that. And he said, you know, I'd give you a letter here, you know, the Irish system, you'd be waiting and all the rest. And I said, oh, really? And he said, yeah, I think it's maybe it's only a cyst. But he said, you know, the best thing is to go home or to go down and check, you know. So I had the hair booked and everything. And so I went off and got my hair done and felt beautiful and thought, this is great. I'm just going out to get checked and, you know, really be told there's nothing wrong, that I'm grand. I had in my head it's going to be fine. So went in anyway. I remember it was a beautiful sunny day. There was no big waiting room. You just went in. He had written urgent on the top of the letter. And I was brought into the mammogram machine straight away. And I suppose in hindsight, I've gone back this summer and I got checked again. You know, what would have only been normally probably a few minutes, I was about 20 minutes and they were taking all sorts of different contraptions and squeezing the breast this way and that way and this way.
And at what point did you get worried then, Suzanne?
I suppose she started asking me questions like, did I have children? And my ears were going, what? And she was just saying, you know, kind of, you know, just trying to communicate, I suppose, with me. My French wasn't great and she was speaking English and there was a bit of a communication barrier. And she was very nice. She led me off into a room and the surgeon met with her then outside and they went through the diagrams, I'd say, straight away. Then she brought me back in. She said, sorry, I have to do one more picture. So she brought me back in another picture and then I was brought back into the room. And then the surgeon, we laughed about it this summer, but he walked in and I'm lying there and he said, I'm sorry, in French, you'll have to go home. And I said, oh God, what, cancer? And then he spoke in English to me. He said, you have cancer, you have two lumps. He said, the big lump is benign, but you have two lumps underneath. And that was
but
the start
sorry,
of the
hang
roller coaster.
All right, there's one thing that I'm struggling to get my head around here, because normally it's sort of the whirlwind of the treatment and the diagnosis, but that we have a problem keeping a pace or keeping abreast of, if it excuse the pun. But you, in your case, you're seen by a consultant and offered a diagnosis within what, an hour?
An hour, yeah. My day started off that morning thinking, you know, I can't ignore this little niggling lump. I'm not feeling 100%. I shouldn't ignore it because I was going back then to work. I knew the pace would be up again. And then to be just thrown into that kind of total, you know, news within an hour. I suppose in one way it's not great. In another way, it was sharp shock and I had to just kind of process it. I was away from home. I was away from family, friends. I had to just, I had three children. I wasn't going to tell them until I knew, because he couldn't tell me what stage it was. He couldn't tell me what type it was. And I know in Ireland, what they would generally have is the full picture before they would tend to give you the results like that. But in another way, it suited me in that then I moved fast the minute I got home to make sure that I got treated as quickly as possible.
And 1 year on, where are you at?
A year on, it's been a hard road. It's kind of tough, I suppose. The chemo is the most challenging bit of it, and you do feel at times, will you ever see the end of that? But no, post all of that, you know, cancer brings with it a change in lifestyle too and a change in attitude to life. So I suppose I'm very fortunate in that I feel that it's been a year, as hard as it's been, it's taught me a lot of lessons about life and not to take things for granted and to live every day. And I see a girl like that, 39, dying of a Sarah Harding, and you hear all the stories that are on the radio there. It's harrowing for people, but it's funny where you get the strength from. And you soon realise...
Where do you get the strength from, Suzanne?
I suppose when you're faced with it, you just have to... I got into a lot of meditation and alternative stuff like acupuncture and reading a lot of people who had maybe faced down a lot of cancers, you know, with their own alternative treatments. And the strength for me, I suppose, is looking at my children and determined that I'm going to see them and see them move on and feel that, you know, this was life calling me and I'm not ready yet, you know. And I just felt, you know, I'd always kind of watched myself medically and gone for bloods. And I just felt that,
right.
you know...
So you were getting all of the regular treatments in addition to complementary treatments, complementary alternative medicine, I mean, but as a complement to the regular treatment, yeah?
I did. I did acupuncture weekly with the chemo, and I went on juices, and I changed my diet, and I did an awful lot of meditation, and I took up Kundalini yoga, so you'll see me chanting now twice a week, things I'd never
done.
Were
you in the mood for yoga in the middle of chemo?
Well, I actually took up the yoga after. I did the acupuncture during it to support it and the juices. And then I took up the yoga the minute the chemo was over. Right. To be honest,
it worked for you.
It does, yeah. People find, I think they have to find something that gives them some sort of support, you know, physically to counteract the fact that your body is literally on the floor. You know, I remember thinking one day that, you know, God, it'd be easier just not to be here. This stuff is just... But you learned a lot as you went along with chemo. I think you go in this green and you're probably better off. And then it's funny, you forget about it. I think it's a bit like childbirth. You just put it to the back of the mind. It's like something happened to you, but you prefer to forget it.
Absolutely. Well, the memory suppresses these things for a very, very good reason. 51551 is the number. Suzanne, thank you very much. Emer, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Philip. How are you?
You're able to compare the public and private system, or at least went through the public system again. How long did it take before you were seen and treated?
Well, what happened was I had a letter from my GP to go on the early screening list due to my family history. Mm-hmm. And that letter was sent into St. James's. Now, my mum had breast cancer twice, so I always checked my breast twice a month religiously. So that was the April of 2018. I sent in that letter to the early screening program because obviously Breast Check is only funded to screen people for over the age of 50. Mm-hmm. And obviously, as we know now from talking to so many ladies, there's so many women being diagnosed younger and younger. That really, really needs to change. In the July of 2018, I found a change, just a change. I wouldn't call it a lump, a change in my breast. And because through my job I have private health insurance, I was able to go through the private system and I was seen, mammogram, ultrasound, biopsy within an hour.
And Emer, sorry, can I ask an intrusive question again, because I hope that it's helpful, but when you say that you noticed a change, what, soreness, hardness?
It wasn't, no, well, as I said, I checked religiously twice a month, depending on your cycle of food, to get a good picture.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a lump. It was kind of a dip. And it was so small that in certain positions, I couldn't feel it. So I went to my GP thinking, this is nothing. Like, I'm going to have to point it out to where it is. Like, but my GP afterwards told me he knew it wasn't a nice change and sent me on to the private health clinic. And then I had was diagnosed with lobular cancer, so that spreads out, kind of like a cauliflower, it's not one lump. So when I had my mastectomy, they discovered 10 centimetres of tumour, which frightened me because I'd been so good at checking and I had barely noticed it, that it had gone, it had spread so much. Now, I opted for a bilateral mastectomy because, again, it's the type that can come back, so I just wanted to rid.
If Emer, you had to do all of this publicly, where would you be in this process by now?
Well, that's the thing. I'm 3 years waiting to be seen through the screening programme in St. James's. I've gotten two letters in the last 3 years asking would I like to remain on the list for an appointment, not getting an appointment date. Now, obviously, if I had found something, it's a different system you go through. But the screening program needs to be reduced because in 3 years, if I had been waiting on that appointment, I mightn't be here now having this conversation with you, Philip.
No.
I spoke to some of the nurses in the screening clinic because I was very upset when I received the letter, second letter, to ask. It felt like out there I was being checked, are you still with us? And they said that they have no funding at all for screening people other than breast check, and the breast check is only for over 50s. So that I asked them, who do I email? Who do I contact? How do we get this changed? It's insanity that women can't just walk in and get a mammogram at any stage. And really, the triple assessment is more important, because the type of cancer I had wouldn't have shown up on a mammogram.
But Eimear, the thing that's coming out of this programme today is that whatever the shortcomings of the health system, the first line of defence, the thing that matters the most here, is what you do yourself at home in the privacy of your own shower and knowing your own body and trusting your instincts on it as well, and saying, no, I know what the official medical advice is here, but no, I'm going to be stubborn, and I'm going to insist that I need further investigation, further scrutiny, further treatment.
We shouldn't have to fight. We shouldn't have to fight to get these things in this day and age. And
you shouldn't, but you do. And if you do have to fight, you have to put up a good, strong fight for yourself. All right, Eimear, I'm afraid I'm out of time there. I'm going to have to take our final break. But thank you very much for your call. Good luck.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Ladies, you've all been brilliant advocates in your own cause in getting that message out. Check your bits and bobs. Doesn't matter what age you are. Start early and keep doing it very, very often. The programme was produced by Lisa Marie Berry, research by Richie Byrne, and sound by Liam Mullen. Ray Darcy on the way next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia e-Niro. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia e-Niro, with a range up to 455 kilometres.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.